This story actually includes two cons, one botched and one ultimately successful. Story starts in 1994. We had a division of labor in our household at that time. When my soon-to-be ex-wife was getting ready for work, because she was employable, my job was to go down to the basement and, excuse me, my job was to make breakfast for the kids, excuse me, get the kids ready. But I had an errand every morning, and my errand was to go down to the basement and find the half gallon of whatever had been $5.99 the day before. And I would stand over the utility tub in the basement, and I would throw back as much cheap vodka as I could, and immediately retch that back up, thus the utility tub, because it makes cleanup a breeze. And by the time I got one to stay down, I was I would be retching, and I would be sweating, and my eyes would be watering. This is not social drinking. I wasn't drinking for conviviality or a social lubricant. I was drinking because I had no choice. And my soon-to-be ex-wife had ascertained my errand, and she found that bottle before I got to it, and she was dumping it down that sink. And I remember like this happened yesterday, and this is nearly 30 years ago. I cared more about what was getting dumped down that utility tub than I cared about the mother of my children, whose trust I had violated again and whose heart I had broken again. And so I wasn't on a winning streak. I was in check. And the only available move to me that morning was to get help. And so three of my four brothers were summoned. I should mention that I come from a ready, shoot, aim family. I'm one of five men now. And we don't talk about feelings. In our household, how are you is not a question. It's a salutation. No more impactful than how about them O's. If someone in my family says, how are you, they're not waiting around for the answer. We don't talk about feelings. So three of those four brothers were summoned, and they threw me in a car, and they took me to meet a group of people who had recovered from my problem. And I remember that it wasn't like this room. There wasn't a lot of exit signs. There was one way in and one way out. And they threw me in, and they stayed outside. They made it very clear to me what was going to happen if I didn't stay inside. And like I said, I wasn't in fighting shape. I didn't want to argue that point. So I stayed inside. And I encountered a group of people who'd recovered from my problem. They were talking about themselves, but it's like they were reading my mail, which would have been fine with me because I wasn't reading my mail in those days. Anything that came through the mail slot with my name on it also had a red stamp that said final notice, which is actually peculiar because it's not like the red stamp's going to make me pay any more attention than the last three letters you sent me. But anyhow, I encountered a fellowship of people who were talking about themselves and they'd recovered from my problem. They were sharing things that you just don't talk about. And they were laughing at each other's indiscretions and losses and miseries and humiliations. And it wasn't an acerbic. They weren't laughing at each other. They were laughing with each other. It had been a long time since I heard myself laughing in a room. So I became very interested. How did they get from how I feel, which was, in a word, was broken, to what they represented, which was recovered? But I didn't like their solution very much. I thought I brought them a willpower problem, and they were talking about a spiritual solution. And I had no interest in that. So I got worse. I kept drinking. And eventually, and here's the con, one morning in 1997, I had no good plan for making it up and down the hardwood stairs of my house with a full glass of anything. And my twin daughters at that point were toddlers. They could move And I knew I was going to have to carry those same kids up and down those stairs, and the outcome did not seem promising. I was terrified that I was going to injure my children. And I remember my big goal for that morning was I was going to remember to change their diapers before I put them down for their nap. And then I was going to drink what I needed to drink in the morning, and I was going to use my kids as an alarm clock to wake me back up so I could pull myself together before she got home. And my mother called, and she said, hey, listen, Bert and Ernie, the Sesame Street characters, are going to be at the Towson Library. Why don't you put the kids in the car and come pick me up, and we'll take the kids to see the Sesame Street thing, which was a great deal more wholesome than the plan I had for the day. And I hid the bottle from which I took my last drink behind a tree in Robert E. Lee Park because I knew I would need that bottle before I got home. And I walked into an intervention. My family was arrayed in a similar semicircle to the one we heard the cops arranged. And they may also have been armed. And they were reading, because like we don't talk about feelings in my family. And the gist of it was that they still loved me, but they didn't like me much very much anymore. And I didn't want to argue that point because I didn't like me that much either. And they said that my option was to get help or get out. And my response was, I remember I was feeling trapped. And my response was, yeah, getting help seems like a fine idea, but I need to pack a bag, which was code for there's a bottle behind a tree in Robert E. Lee Park, and if I can just get to that bottle, then whatever was $7.99, prices had gone up, whatever was $7.99 a half gallon, and I will figure this out. But there was an intervention coach in the room, and he told him I might come up with a plan like that, and so the bag was already packed, and off I went. And I came to the next morning. I had no idea where I was. It wasn't my plan to stop drinking that day. And I was having breakfast. I came out of the detox, and I was having breakfast. And there was a guy at the breakfast table, and he was magnanimously sharing his cigarettes with me, which was kind of him, but also peculiar because I don't smoke. But I was in that place where there was no cheap vodka on the breakfast menu, so his nicotine would have to do. And so I said, what happens next? Because like I said, I didn't know where I was. And he said, well, it's not required, but a lot of us go to chapel after breakfast. And I said, chapel? Cheese and crackers, chapel. I didn't say cheese and crackers. I said, but are you taking the cigarettes with you? And he assured me he was. And so I followed this schmuck into this chapel. And what happened for me is that the Creator got my attention. I had been beaten into a state of reasonableness, and the Creator got my attention. And on my way into that chapel, if you'd have said, do you think a spiritual solution is going to solve your problem? I would have said, no, next question. And if you'd have asked me 15 minutes later, I would have said, same question, I would have said, boy, I sure hope so. And I've been working on boy, I sure hope so for a long time now. I have opportunity to tell that story a lot and where it can be useful. And I was telling it, I was probably 2 years sober, and I was telling it, and I can tell it funny, but I heard myself telling it, and I realized that, and I'd already sat down with my mom, the one who made that phone call, the one who conned me, and I would have told you that I'd already cleaned up my side of the street, that I'd already made right what I broke, and I heard myself tell that story, and it occurred to me that the terror that my behavior must have instilled in her to make her so desperate as to make that phone call, to invite her drunk son to put her grandchildren in the car and drive loaded out to the intervention. The terror, How do you fix that? How do you make that right? It's been a long time. I've been taught to give away freely what I was freely given. And my 85-year-old now mother is just scandalously spoiled. But mostly she doesn't have to worry about me anymore. So, thanks.